Weekly with James Richardson.
Dateline, a tropical paradise. Gentle winds stir the palm fronds on the annual Football Weekly summer getaway. As the pod crew recline here in the shade of a passing Barry, there's more on our minds though than just our fashionably knotted handkerchiefs. There's football too. All the summer stories. Real Madrid dropping their lolly. Catalogue bargain Michael Owen. Newcastle. Sven at Notts County. Celtic winning away in Europe. Germany, Italy, Spain. Ibrahimovic being worth £60 million. So many things to talk about. So we've stuck them all together in a big bumper Football Weekly, ready for the new season and featuring all your usual favourites. Shawnee, Sid, Kevin, Barry, Rafa, lower league botherer John Ashdown, and more. All of that in a special holiday edition of Near Earth Orbit's number one podcast. Okay, well, reclining with me here on the Sun Lounge is Kevin McCarra.
Hi, James.
Hi, Kevin. Tanning up nicely there.
It's better than work, isn't it?
It is. Barry, how are you? Barry Glendenning.
I'm very well.
Excellent news. And the obligatory sick man on holiday, Sean Ingle, a bit pale and pasty there in the shade of the
park. Well, just hacking up some stuff.
Yes, indeed. Everybody having a lovely summer?
Well, I went to Sid's wedding in Tarifa in Spain, which was absolutely lovely. It was a very Spanish wedding. Best man's speech wasn't until 1 a.m. It finished about 9 a.m. But the best bits were Sid's dog wearing a Liberace-style silver spangly glitter ball bow.
Right.
And the best man's speech, where the best line was apparently Sid, his first day of secondary school, doesn't know anyone, arrives at class late, walks in front of a packed class and says, "Hello, Sid fans."
Right. And did that work?
I think they were all bemused.
All right. Like the dog.
At one point, the dog was leading all the kids that were there around, like the Pied Piper of Hamelin.
Right. Good. Also in Spain this summer, Real Madrid. We'll be hearing from Sid about that and possibly his wedding as well later on. But Real Madrid and Manchester City, and that's about it in terms of the big transfer movers. So here in part one, which we usually dedicate to things of a more Premier League nature, let's just talk about what's going on at Eastlands. And Kevin McCarra, can City win the league?
No, I just do not think they have the same quality that Manchester United have. I don't see even anyone say to compare centre-forward with Fernando Torres. I know they spent all that money on Carlos Tevez, but he would have to deliver far more in terms of goals than he did last season with United, where he was admired mostly for his hard work. It's as if City, they've bought good players, yes, but they couldn't get the absolute peak players they wanted, so instead they spent similar sums on players who were slightly just below the top tier.
Sean, from the expression on your face, you're either disagreeing or you just coughed up one of those.
But no, I just think, I mean, City spent gazillions last season and Mark Hughes took them from 9th to 10th. So why people think they're now going to crash into the big four? There's so many egos in that place, and Hughes doesn't seem to have much of a, unless they're going to sort of go back and play an old-fashioned 1-4-5-1 from, you know, the 1890s. I'm not quite sure how they're going to fit all those strikers in there. I mean, Santa Cruz is going to be injured. I mean, 70 million, that's got to be the worst piece of business this summer. He's only ever scored 10 goals once in a season in his career. Mm. And that's shocking. Anyway, but how Bellamy's going to react? Adebayor's got an ego, a big ego on him.
OK, they're not in Europe, which may prove of an advantage along the way. They couldn't get John Terry.
That statement John Terry released was one of the most hilarious things in the summer, suggesting that he'd been silent for a month because him and his and Chelsea were trying to, you know, think of the right words to describe why he wanted to stay. Why couldn't he just been honest? You know, if the Times came in for Barry and said, "We're going to offer you a quarter of a million," Barry would at least think about
we'd
it.
We'd have to pay a quarter of a million.
But Barry would be gone. The door would be swinging there.
Right. I think it would have reflected well on Terry if he'd said, "By heavens, I attended, it's fantastic money, but decided to stay."
Exactly.
I mean, that's an honourable thing to say, isn't it?
Yeah, but you don't find honour among thieves and footballers.
Yeah, sad, isn't it? Okay.
The thing is, all Chelsea's fans appear not to care that he's sort of treated them like morons. Because I wrote an article suggesting that he's, you know, while I've no problem with him going to City or not going to City, it's just the contempt with which he treated Chelsea fans by, you know, issuing this ludicrous statement. And I got savage for it. So, you know, it seems footballers can do anything and their supporters of their teams will just turn a blind eye. I'm actually surprised he didn't go. I thought he would go.
For £235,000 a week?
Yeah. I mean, some people say that, you know, you get to a point where you're earning so much money that, you know, an extra 50, 60, 80 grand a week doesn't make any difference. But I don't think that It
hasn't proved the case with you.
Certainly not with me. I don't think it would with anyone else either.
Now, across town from Manchester City, Manchester United, reigning champions, of course. However, Cristiano Ronaldo, gone. Carlos Tevez, gone. Scholes, Giggs, Neville, a year older. Can Fergie, Sean Ingle, create another generation of winners?
I'd be surprised if United won the league this season, even though they're favourites. Fergie has created three great teams at United, the 94 vintage, the 99 vintage and the 07-08 vintage. But Ronaldo scored 67 goals, I think, in the last two seasons. He's been replaced by Antonio Valencia, who's a decent player, but he scored 3 goals and 3 assists.
And Michael Owen.
Don't get me started on Michael Owen. I mean, one day he's been linked with Hull and Stoke.
Right.
The next he's going to sign a 70,000 deal with Manchester United. What surprised me was none of the commentators said, what's Fergie doing? They all praised him, probably because they're all scared of him.
You're not scared, though, are you?
Well, I don't have day-to-day dealings with Fergie.
I think it'd be unfair. I think people think maybe Michael Owen will score goals simply because he's got so many good players around him. You know, and no one wants to look stupid if he goes there and scores 20 goals. I think that's why the press didn't say, you idiot Fergie. You could be embarrassing that.
But it's which goals he scores. I mean, I think Owen will score goals against the likes of, you know, Wigan at home and Stoke at home and Burnley at home. But will he score goals in those really important games when United need him to? I don't think he will.
Also, Sean, that's kind of pay-as-you-play deal, isn't it? I mean, Manchester United didn't leave themselves exposed in any way, so it's not a deal you can knock, really, I don't think.
He's free, not including post and packaging. But, I mean, it's still a...
Yeah, I think it's worth a gamble by Fergie. I don't think it's stupid at all.
But when people hark back, it's almost like, I've said this before, it's like Gazza. People kept thinking, oh, Gazza will return to his best throughout the 90s and early part of this decade. Michael Owen hasn't been a great player for 7-8 years.
James, could you testify that Gazza had bigger problems than just the passing of time?
I'm nodding, listeners. All right, so basically, Manchester United, a weaker side this time around. Are their competitors not weaker as well, though?
Well, that's the interesting thing about this season's Premier League. I think all the teams, perhaps with the exception of Chelsea, which are pretty much the same, they've signed Shirkoff, who's a good signing, you know, perhaps a weaker. You know, Liverpool have lost Xabi Alonso, although they have brought in Akolani now and Glenn Johnson. I think Arsenal need a couple of new players as well. So I think that's a fair call.
It's nice on the level, actually, isn't it? Arsenal actually played terrific football, and it's still only the pre-season Emirates Cup, but they played some marvellous football. If Wenger could overcome his aversion to signing, you know, a strong central midfield player or something, who knows?
Brad Fuchs responding to your tweet, Sean, saying, why is Arsene Wenger so proud? When will he admit that all youth all the time doesn't work in the Premier League? I read with interest, though, there's talk of him bringing back Patrick Vieira, which would be an extraordinary reversal.
It would. I mean, Vieira basically hasn't left the centre circle in the last two years within Inter. He's done nothing. From what I understand, chatting to a couple of people in Italy, he has had a really good pre-season, which he's been fitter than he was. But I still think it would be a strange move. They're very, very close, though. And speaking to Rafa Honigstein last night, he was thinking that it was, because they're so close and they're friends, that he's just bigging Vieira up.
Right.
So you might get a move elsewhere.
Barry, is this the year that Arsenal drop out of the top four?
It seems that everyone thinks it will be the year. I don't, personally.
Mm-hmm. I think Arsenal might actually improve this season.
Well, I think there are two interesting facts. First of all, they finished 22 points above Man City last season, which I think is a significant margin. Second thing is they only lost once of their last 24 league games, Arsenal. If they could bring in Hangeland, they could bring in a decent centre-half. I think odds of 10-1 in Arsenal winning the league aren't ridiculous. Mm. They two more signings. They've got, with Arshavin, with Eduardo back.
Brzezinski, we go again?
But he's apparently injured again.
I think, Sean, the strange thing is that the spine of the team's a bit that doesn't get attended to. They've bought Thomas Vermaelen. I haven't seen him. He might be the answer centre-half. But they're crying out for a defensive midfield player with a bit of presence. Mm. They haven't done that. They've now got Van Persie's going to play centre forward. He's not really a kind of back to goal player, is he, Van Persie?
You fancy Arsenal at 10-1 if they can bring somebody in at the back?
I think they're not the worst bet in the world. I think they may well improve on last year.
What are the odds on Liverpool then?
Liverpool are 4-1, which I think is a decent bet. I mean, the key with Liverpool, I think, is Torres and Gerrard. Last season, they only started 14 out of 38 games together, and they won 12 out of those. And do the other two. If those two stay fit, they've got a huge, huge chance, I think. I'm going to say something which I'm going to get hammered for, but I saw Lucas at the Olympics last year and I didn't think he was that bad. I know everyone dismisses him as just... And I think he might be a player that might be a bit better than we currently give him credit for and might have something, you know, to do with Liverpool, how Liverpool play this season.
Oh, lovely.
But certainly Xabi Alonso was a very good player, so Akolani is going to have to up his game to match that.
Right. Now, what about the final of the big four, Chelsea? You're saying more or less the same squad, but now with extra Ancelotti on top.
Well, I think two things about Chelsea are interesting. One is Ancelotti is trying to, who's only won one title in 8 years at AC Milan, which is an interesting stat. He's trying to change things to a 4-4-2 formation.
He did get quite a long way in Europe on several occasions.
Fair point. But Xherkov apparently has been fantastic in pre-season.
I think Drogba's key to this, I mean, how fit will he be? How interested will he be? Because the only alternative seems to be Anelka, who does score quite a lot of goals, but really well playing against smaller teams. Well, the dependence on Drogba is enormous. But if he did play well, I think Chelsea could certainly win this. In fact, I think they may even be favourites if Drogba stays fit.
But, I mean, Ancelotti knows all about managing a team of 30-somethings, having taken charge of AC Milan, doesn't he? So,
well, yeah, he does, but he was managing them in Italy.
And he won one league title with them.
How do you think they'll do, Jimbo? I mean, you know better... Chelsea, you know Ancelotti better than the rest of us. How do you think he'll do?
Tough one, that. I don't think it's going to work out. I really hope it does. I think he's one of the, you know, nicest people, etc., etc. I think he's comes from a different mentality. I might be completely wrong. Do you probably think start well like Scolari did, and then it'll...
I mean, there's this fantasy he's been brought because he's a European Cup specialist, but things go badly in the Premier League. Nobody will say, never mind, come the spring, it'll all
work
out.
And they
weren't
doing badly in the Champions League anyway. You know, they got to the final and then narrowly missed out on the final again. Sean Boiling wants to know your two best transfers, Kevin, of the close season by a Premier League team. That's the best buy and the best sell.
Oh, well, the best buy is Xherkov, I think, because he can take people on, and I think Chelsea have lacked that, somebody who will get the ball and run at people.
We need lots of people who can take people on in this economy, don't we?
We're talking about the worst signing, were we?
Rocky Santa Cruz.
Well, yeah, but I would say Rocky Santa Cruz, but only because of the guy's not fit. I mean, I'm not trying to knock Rocky Santa Cruz, but the word tendonitis would scare me if I was a manager. These are things that don't go away.
Sean, best and worst?
I think Wigan have signed a good player in from Swansea, a chap called Jordi Gomez, who scored 14 goals last season, and he's only cost them like 1. Something million. I think he's an attacking midfielder. I think he will be a good signing. Worst, I think anyone, most of the players Man City have signed, to be honest, but particularly Santa Cruz.
Barry?
Just to be contrary and different, I'm going to go for a Birmingham signing for best, or possibly if he works out, because they need someone who scores goals, Christian Benitez. And I think Wigan getting rid of their Egyptian contingent, even though they were only on loan, is probably the best out of the season. Mido and Zaki are gone. Looks like Zaki, I think his agent said yesterday, 65% certain to go to Portsmouth, which means he probably won't go to Portsmouth. Mm.
Well, that brings us on to a very interesting situation down at the bottom end of the table. Should we, in the interest of time, just quickly nominate three teams that are going to be out of the Premier League at the end of the season?
To be honest, I was, you would find this difficult to believe. I was in the gym the other day and I needed something to listen to on my iPod. There was nothing new on iTunes, so I was listening to one of our old podcasts, one of the last ones of the season. And I think there was about 4 or 5 predictions made in the course of that podcast, and every single one of them was wrong.
All right.
So we are
should
a joke.
Should we predict who's not going down? Three teams not going down.
Well, I've backed Portsmouth a while ago now. They were 22-1 to finish bottom and 5-1 to go down. They've come in a bit just because they've lost so many players. Crouch, Defoe, Diarra, Montari, Johnson. They've added Finnan and Mokena and...
Other teams in some difficulty, Hull, for example?
Well, the way Hull played back end of last season, you've got to think they're going down. I think Burnley, I'd love to see them stay up. And I think they've got a chance where they attack, but they conceded 60 goals in the Championship last season, which was the 18th worst out of 24. So I think they might get a few spankings on the way. I
mean, Owen Coyle stayed despite apparently being offered a Celtic job. So it could be a painful season, though, couldn't it?
I think they'll be okay, and might be just... Like last season, there will be so many bad teams in the Premiership, there'll be three worse than them. I think Wolves will struggle because they have so few players with Premier League experience. Kevin Doyle has come in, Marcus Hanneman's come in, and they've got Jody Craddock, who was still there from their last ill-fated stay in the Premier League. But I don't think there's anyone else there that's ever played. They scored a lot of goals last season, but whether or not those strikers, Sylvain Ebanks Blake and Chris Iwuluma, will be able to cut it in the Premier League remains to be seen. The thing is, though, you see, if a team gets off to a bad start and their manager gets sacked, someone else comes in, they might turn things around. So it's not as easy to predict.
Predictions in not easy shop.
Yeah,
this just in.
We certainly make it look difficult anyway.
Right. The pretenders to top four status or Europa League spots. I'm talking about teams like Spurs, your Aston Villa, your Everton, perhaps after their miraculous campaign last time around. Who's going to be better? Who's going to be worse off this
miraculous?
Time around?
I mean, it's the second year in a row they finished fifth. They just work hard and they're well organised. I don't think it's a miracle.
They did extremely well under the despite the continual problems with anybody with remotely goal-scoring nature going injured the whole time. Spurs
are interesting. They spent a lot up front, but I mean, King and Woodgate, you're relying on both of those to stay fit for a large part of the season.
But did you know they only had 2 points when Harry Redknapp joined
them? They did.
So if you didn't waste the first 8 games the way they did last year, would you not be up there?
I think, to be honest, I think they'll finish between 5th and 8th, and that doesn't really say very much. Villa, I think, are more interesting because they've lost Barry. I think the retirement of Martin Lawson is a huge loss because he really inspired Curtis Davis. They had 41 points from 21 games before Larson went, but they only won 2 of the last 13 the season. And I think Martin O'Neill's a big friend of Kevin, but I think...
He doesn't answer his calls, though, Kevin?
He's not a big friend of mine. I know him, so everyone...
He'd like to be, but Kevin's...
Kevin's hard to pin down. Yeah. But I think Villa will perhaps not do as well.
What do you think, Kevin?
It's a small squad. I mean, Fabian Delph signed... he's young, $6 million, rising to 8. He'll need time. I think Sean's right. Martin Larsson was an enormous problem for them. The good player and just the influence in the team as a whole. Gareth Barry's quite hard to replace too.
Sorry, just one thing, if I could go back to the foot of the table, or what we foresee as being the foot of the table. I did notice in the course of my extensive research for this podcast that Burnley have a very interesting opening four fixtures, because they're away to Stoke, which is very difficult, home to Man United, home to Everton, away to Chelsea, and then away to Liverpool. So they're taking on four of the top five from last season in their opening fixtures. I don't know, is that a good thing or a bad thing, because they're going to be fired up and ready to go, but or is it a bad thing that they could find themselves like without a point after 5 games of the season?
I guess we'll know 5 weeks into the season.
We will indeed, won't we?
I was just about to conclude, actually, but we've forgotten all about Sunderland, Barry. How's everything there with the Mackems?
Well, Steve Bruce is in charge. I think everyone's quite happy with that appointment. Just signed Darren Bent, which I think is a good signing for $10 million.
Right.
Harry Redknapp didn't treat him very well. And I think he's the kind of player needs the proverbial arm around the shoulder and to be told he's great and get on and score goals.
Right.
So hopefully that's what he'll do.
Is Fraser Campbell a gamble of 3.5 rising to $6 million?
Well, that's peanuts these days, isn't it? So I don't think it's a gamble.
I'm just not sure what he's done to...
We'll see.
Well, that's about all the Premier League preview for now. Let's take another little musical sting, sip on our low-cal banana coladas, and come back with arguably the most competitive and exciting league in Europe last season. It says here in a note written by Raphael Honigstein, the Bundesliga. Yes, the Bundesliga. Germany's top division last time out, Wolfsburg with a surprise package, winning their first ever title, while Bayern Munich took a tumble with Jürgen Klinsmann. This summer brings Louis van Gaal to München. Yes, and a host of spending, as apparently the Bundesliga has been outspending both Italy and Spain, if you don't count Real Madrid, over the summer. Probably the Premier League too, because there's not been that much happening in the Premier League. Anyway, I think our man from the fatherland, Raphael Honigstein, is now standing by to give us an update.
The league is as open as it was last season. When you look at the number of teams who will be in the frame, at least for the Champions League, you have to really go down a list of almost 10 teams. So literally half the league playing for, perhaps not for the championship, but playing for a top three finish, which shows you just how balanced the league is in many ways. Of course, a lot of it, as always, will have to do with Bayern's strength. When they tend to show a bit of weakness, it lets other teams in and it opens up the field, as it were. I expect them to be a bit better this season simply because Van Gaal comes in with some very good ideas, and he is definitely somebody who knows his stuff a lot more than Klinsmann does. Fortunately for the Bundesliga, Diego seems to be the only star who's left this summer. They've really maintained all their big names, and of course Frank Ribery is the biggest of all. Bayern have really changed their mind about him. When the initial story broke that they were talking to United back in April, they were very keen on getting rid of him. He'd just had some very poor games. He was giving off an air of somebody who didn't want to be at the place, and they felt they could do without him. And they were very close to signing Diego as well, which would have given them almost a perfect replacement of sorts. It all changed, I think, over the last few months, where they decided to really stand their ground, turn down Real Madrid. Uli Hoeneß said that unless Real Madrid came with a cheque of 100 million euros, they weren't even prepared to negotiate. And Ribéry himself seems to resign himself to staying for another season. So it's a big boost for the league because he is the big star attraction. But even, you know, the fact that Wolfsburg and Hoffenheim have kept their teams completely together, the fact that, for example, Wolfsburg can sign Aubameyang Martins, that wouldn't have happened a few years ago. Or similarly, Wolfsburg turning down a 20 million euro offer for Edin Dzeko from AC Milan. And it's going to be a very important year for the league as well internationally, because they've got a very good chance to outdo the Italians in Europe collectively. If they have a decent finish in terms of collective results, they can take away the fourth Champions League spot from Serie A, which would be a huge achievement for the Bundesliga.
Very interesting, as is Kevin Raffer's book.
English or Football, yes. So, which I went to launch last night in the 34th floor of Centre Point. Very enjoyable view of London.
Anyone nice there? Did you see
anyone famous? No.
Sean Ingle, you were there, weren't you?
Sean was there, yeah.
I was, yeah. I was
any dog stories from that function?
No, but I was chatting to Jonathan Wilson about his Valentine's Day that he spent with Rob Smythe, sat on the couch, watching both legs of Bayern versus Red Star Belgrade in 91, I think.
Right.
Or 1990. And then they went out and had a drink together.
How do you kill that which has no life?
Okay, excellent. English of football. Fussball.
Yes.
Right, okay. Now, Kevin.
Yes.
We were joking about you paying money, but you paid money to go and see Celtic. I played the other day. They had a terrific result this week.
Yes.
Winning away at Dynamo Moscow. And on the whole, though, recent weeks seem to be full of people predicting the demise of Scottish football. The Satanta deal has had taken its toll, etc., etc.
It was very embarrassing, the European results. I mean, Aberdeen hammered at home 5-1 by Sigma Olomouc. I mean, and Falkirk getting out to a team from Van Dusen, in fact, it was beat them. I mean, so Celtic's victory was timely. It's also their first away victory in the Champions League since the Ice Age, I think. And but they played really well last night. But clubs in Scotland now do have to find bargains, and it's early days, but Tony Mowbray seems to have found an extremely good midfield player for $1.5 million. Landry and Guemo is on loan for an option to buy at $1.5 million from Nancy. A strong defensive midfield player who can also pass the ball forward.
But Scottish football in general?
I mean, fairly disastrous, of course. The Satanta collapse hasn't helped. I'm sure you'll
be... Don't mention it. The elephant in the room.
You're bringing on a trauma. A lot of people are upset about Satanta going down the tubes, I imagine.
Yeah.
This is Jimbo and the boy. For a start.
No, I'm extending my summer holiday. I'm quite delighted by it.
No, but seriously, I mean, it's not huge money it's Scottish football's getting, but it's money that it needed nonetheless. And
right.
This is a very, very bad time in Scotland.
No, I understand. Believe me, I do. What's this? Sven joining Notts County? What's this, Sean?
I think my jaw dropped through the floor when you heard that. I mean, I think it's... You know why he's going, because he's getting £80,000 a week. And what he will be able to bring as a director of football.
Sorry,
to...
he's getting £80,000 a week.
Well, that's one of the rumours. Is it 40?
All right, still, he's getting £40,000 a week.
You hear various figures, but what is he going to be able to add as director of football for a League Two outfit when he says he knows nothing about League Two? You know, I'm not sure. What's quite interesting, though, that the Qataris that have bought into... Notts County are quite keen on, you know, they like the idea that Notts County being the oldest league club, and they want to bring them slowly up through the divisions. I can't see Sven staying there for a very long time.
Can I ask just a question? You say they're the oldest league club. How do you... Surely there must have been more than one team for it to be a league.
The oldest club still playing in the Football League, I'm not scared.
Oh, right, amazing. Okay.
But I think, you know, Nottingham University famously has a ratio, I think, of five females to one... I think it's apocryphal, no, to one male. So I don't know whether Sven had heard that and thought, you know... So if he's down the local Roxy's, you know, pound a pint night, then we know why he's joined.
And there's also a branch of Hooters beside Meadow Lane. I bow to no man in my total admiration for Sven and his ability to earn enormous amounts of money for doing absolutely nothing.
Don't you also think the 40 grand a week is going to be the tip of the iceberg? There'll be some incentivisation for promotion and so on.
But Kevin, you're steeped in football. There must be some reason, some rationale behind this.
I mean, to be fair, he had a brilliant start to his career with small-time football in Sweden. He's saying he's just, like, come back to his roots. I don't really believe that. I do think that there will be a large reward if he meets certain objectives in terms of promotion.
Right. Sven going back to his roots, though, just one of the many interesting stories in the other divisions. You've got, Newcastle still in disarray. Charlton, Norwich and Southampton in League One. Oh, Paul Ince back at MK Dons. Nice how we've all gone on to do so well from our Gazetta days. And but anyway, now, the man who keeps his eye on all that kind of thing for us is, of course, John Ashdown. Let's get his update.
The big story in the Championship this year is going to be Newcastle, almost regardless of whether they kick on and do okay or if it all goes horribly, horribly wrong. We won't really know until the end of August how it's all going to pan out, because as it stands at the moment, they've still got a reasonably strong squad. The inertia of the ownership issue is incredibly damaging, though. They are a club in complete disarray. They haven't had a good pre-season, and they're also going to be hampered by that revolting yellow striped away kit, which isn't going to make them popular with anybody. I've got a feeling it could all unravel for them, and I can see them missing out on the playoffs. Of the other teams to come down from the Premier League, I think West Brom are looking the strongest. They've obviously got a question mark over their new manager, Roberto Di Matteo. There are plenty of big name managers this season. Nigel Clough, obviously. Roy Keane at Ipswich has arrived there with a great deal of fanfare. In fact, there's seven new managers who will be managing their first games with new clubs on the first day of the season. Keane is obviously one of those. And last season, Ipswich were solid, very much mid-table. They never got any higher than 8th, never went any lower than 18th. And the summer signings so far haven't really suggested much of an improvement on that. Keane, though, has won promotion from this division before, obviously with Sunderland a few years ago. And you do sense that he might have something up his sleeve. If you pushed me for a tip to who's going to win the Championship title this season, I think I'd probably go with West Brom. Sheffield United, who've made some astute signings over the summer, I could see them getting there into that second automatic place. Middlesbrough, Cardiff, Ipswich, and perhaps even Nottingham Forest to make up the rest of the playoffs. Down at the bottom, Blackpool look vulnerable, Barnsley, Scunthorpe, and maybe even Coventry, it seemed like the next big team preparing for the drop. But of course, it's not just about the Championship. There are two other divisions below that. League One is going to be very interesting this year. They do have their very own Big Four in the shape of Leeds, Charlton, Southampton and Norwich. I have a feeling that the team to beat this season is going to be Paul Ince's MK Dons. Ince had a great time there last time he was at the Stadium MK, horribly named Stadium MK. All the focus is obviously going to be on the teams that have come down. I think Norwich are probably the best place to bounce straight back. In League Two, it's tough to call. There are a lot of teams. Obviously, the big unknown, the big news over some there is Sven. But even without Sven's influence, and sort of regardless of how much influence he has, Notts County's recruitment's been interesting this summer. They've brought in Lee Hughes, whatever you think of him, is going to score goals in that league. And they've got Luke Rogers up front. Graham Lee at the back is a good signing. I think they'll be much more competitive this year than they were last year. My tip for the League Two title, though, is Bury, who were very solid last year, only just missed out and could go one better this year.
John Ashdown there. Well, plenty of interesting stories, of course. There's also John Barnes making the move to Tranmere, which, in a word, do you think that's going to be a success or a failure, Kevin McCarron?
Hard one.
Okay. Meanwhile, Newcastle, who start off with West Brom, their Championship season, and, of course, yet another sad bit of news for fans up there, the death of Sir Bobby Robson.
Bobby Robson was seen as quick, eccentric and colourful and so on, but he was also a fantastically tough and effective football manager, and tough literally from his early days of getting involved in punch-ups of players and training grounds and so on. And for a guy who seems quintessentially English, He travelled well. You think of, all right, he didn't win a league in Spain, but he won a Cup Winners' Cup. He won the league in other countries, Holland and Portugal, yeah. So I think his idea of football did transfer. He was no little Englander. His team's played fantastic football. I think especially Ipswich, where it was done really on a shoestring. And winning UEFA Cup in those days meant something, especially with some of the results they racked up and the goals they scored. I think he had a good football brain. Turning John Wark from a defender into a goal-scoring midfield player was a real coup, which was necessary at a club like that. Which was short of resources. Newcastle, in retrospect, it now seems like a triumph. His last three seasons in the top six, only to be told that he was past it because there's younger and better people to take over and lead that club forward, as we know. A very effective career over a long, long time, and not particularly lucky with England for all the mockery he got. I mean, things could have gone differently for him there too.
Football Weekly from Guardian.co.uk.
Now, biggest story of the summer, of course, Real Madrid and their extraordinary antics on the transfer market. Who else to tell us all about it but Dr. Simon, a.k.a. Sid Lowe, who spoke to Sean Ingle a short time ago while I was at the pool bar.
Hi, Sid. We were talking about your wedding earlier. While you were getting hitched, Real Madrid were bringing some of the biggest names in football to the Bernabeu. Ronaldo, Kaká, Benzema, Alonso, Arbeloa. How do you think the Galacticos project, Mark II, will go this year?
Well, it's difficult to know exactly how it will pan out because, of course, the big question mark really is has Florentino Perez learnt the lessons from last time? And perhaps just as big as that is, does he really think he has to learn lessons from last time? Because I think Perez probably believes he didn't really make any major mistakes. So that's a fairly significant question mark, of course. And obviously, because Real Madrid have done it kind of almost on fast forward this time. You know, it used to be one superstar each summer. This time they've brought in two superstars, plus Benzema, if you count him as one, Xavi Alonso, which is particularly important because Florentino Perez has talked about trying to Spanishify the squad. So it's difficult to know. And certainly in terms of the basic starting 11, it is a fantastically strong team they're going to have.
Surely, though, it won't take that long before the tensions in the squad with that many egos, with Raul used to being the big cheese, will kick in. Have there been any problems so far?
Well, not yet, there hasn't. And obviously, it's still very, very early to know exactly how this will pan out. But, of course, Raul is one of the big question marks. You know, he's used to pretty much running the dressing room to having things his own way. And I think there's a feeling this could be the beginning of the end with him in that, you know, in terms of pure talent, in terms of his contribution to the side, he probably shouldn't have a starting 11 place. But I think he'll play a lot of minutes. He's played quite a lot under Manuel Pellegrini already. He's actually played reasonably well in pre-season, but then that's kind of typical of Raul, that he gets up and running quicker than others do, I think. But there is a feeling that he's starting the kind of slow decline and that he won't have a big role to play this year. There's one other factor that's really important there, of course, which is, although it's never publicly admitted, the relationship between Florentino Perez and Raul is really, really poor from the last time that they coincided at the club. And I think Florentino himself wouldn't be too worried if Raul was to slip out of the side.
That's interesting. But also last season, we talked about probably Atletico Madrid and Valencia were going to sell several players in the summer. Yet from now, it seems that David Villa, Diego Forlan, David Silva are all staying. Why is that?
It's a miracle. That's the first thing to say. I think perhaps the answer in terms of Atletico Madrid is maybe there's still time for those changes to happen. Diego Forlan is talking about a new contract with him at the moment, but he's actually broken off negotiations, so there's a chance that might not go through. I think what's happened, because Real Madrid moved so quickly for Kaká and Cristiano Ronaldo, I mean, bear in mind this was right at the very, very start of the summer, it feels like we're at the back end of the summer already, but there's still 3 weeks to go the transfer window, so there could still be changes in terms of Atletico Madrid. And I would still expect, because I have to say I'm surprised that it hasn't happened yet, some sort of movement out of the club. Valencia are a different case altogether, and theirs is even more surreal than it's been for the last 2 years, in that David Villa, for example, was told to go, then told to stay, then told to go, then told to stay again, and in the end he's been forced to stay. He's very, very upset about it. Of course, Valencia have only sold Raul Albiol so far. They will try and withstand bids for David Silva, and they're saying that financially they're on an even keel because they've had basically there's going to be a share option when the season starts, and they've had a bailout from a company about whom no one knows anything, and that's the question mark. I still see Valencia being in desperate trouble at some stage, but in terms of players, they've got a hell of a squad.
I understand that many in Spain are talking about the Primera División re-overtaking the Premier League as the biggest and strongest in the world again. I mean, is that true?
Yeah, and I think when you look at it on the face of it, then it's very easy to understand that argument. I think there's a temptation to agree with them as well. You look at Real Madrid, and what they've done is they've bought the best player from the Italian league, they've bought the best player from the English league, the best player from the French league. Barcelona have added to that by buying probably the second best player in the Italian league, although, of course, I stand corrected if James believes that Zlatan Ibrahimovic and Kaká are not the best two in Italy. And Spain are saying, wow, look what we've got. They've outbought the other leagues in Europe so far. But then when you scratch the surface a little bit, you know, it's very much only skin deep. You scratch the surface a bit and you see, well, actually all of the money that's been spent, pretty much has been spent by Real Madrid, who spent €265 million so far. Barcelona, obviously €65 million on Ibrahimovic, if you count Ed Samoleta as €20 million, which is his formal valuation. And everybody else really hasn't spent very much at all. So it really isn't filtering through. Yeah, of course you've got one or two other big names knocking around, not least Jermaine Pennant at Real Zaragoza, which is surreal. And the fact that Spanish clubs, in terms of buying foreign players, have enormous tax advantages. But I do think it's only skin deep, and I do think that what we're going to see is Real Madrid and Barcelona dominating yet again. These are two clubs that have won 18 of the last 21 leagues, and frankly, I think they'll win 18 of the next 21 as well.
So finally, give us your top three and a couple of clubs that may surprise us this season.
Well, I think the top three, the top two is obvious. It's Madrid and Barcelona. The question mark is in what order. I must say, I feel like Madrid will do it this year. I feel like Madrid will win it. Barcelona will be second. Third, well, then you're looking at any one from a number of clubs. I would guess Sevilla, because Sevilla still have a certain degree of stability. I don't think they'll lose players, whereas I think between now and the start of the season, there's still a chance that Valencia and Atletico Madrid will do. In terms of clubs to surprise, well, I'd love to say Real Zaragoza with Jermaine Pennant. And of course, he's got the talent, if not the temperament, to be a very good player, but they've just lost their captain Zapatero. Financially, they're in trouble. Organisationally, they are all over the place, so I don't think they're going to be a good side. There are one or two good players knocking around at some of the smaller clubs. I kind of quite like the look of Valencia, despite everything. You know, they've got terrible financial crisis, but as I say, they've got great players, so maybe if Unai Emery can just keep that on an even keel, Valencia could be a great side again.
Dr. Simon Lowe. In Spain, Real Madrid, Kevin Macara. Can it all go wrong?
It certainly can, but I think no one really knows how the team fits together. It's this thing again of technical directors and coaches buying players, but it's fantastic talent. I mean, I think everyone would be delighted to go and look at the first game in Italy, I would think, you know, so, and see how it all does fit together.
Yeah. Barry?
I suspect that, that it might not all be plain sailing for them, you know, because players like Xabi Alonso and Alvaro Arbeló will be jealous that they didn't get the big unveiling that Cristiano Ronaldo did. No catwalks for them to prance around on in front of 90,000 adoring fans whose mental health you'd honestly have to question, I think.
Why? Wouldn't you be delighted if Sunderland were to unveil a galaxy of stars like that?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't go and, you know, turn up to cheer them on for, you know, successfully putting on a replica shirt. Well, I suppose it's not a replica shirt, is it, if the player is wearing it, and prancing down a catwalk.
Okay.
It does seem even bigger than the Zidane thing, doesn't it? As if they got the keys to the supermarket and were allowed to shop early before anybody else is allowed in. You know, they get first pick and everyone else waited to see what was left over, even Manchester United. I don't recall anything like this before.
No, it's absolutely unprecedented. And I'd like to see us go out on, are they going to be successful, wildly successful, which they have to be for it to make any sense, or are they going to collapse in a hideous mess of imploding or exploding egos, etc.? I'm going to put my neck on the line and say, no, I'm going to say, I think they're going to collapse hideously. I think Pellegrini will last 11 weeks and then it'll just blow up. And I don't, why is everyone going to go and buy their shirts? Really? Why?
Well, I'm surprised with, you know, the Ronaldo number 9 shirt. I wonder whether people just wheel the old one out of the club.
Right, that's a good point.
Fat Ronaldo.
Was it Iniesta that said, I think Iniesta, someone said that Barcelona, we've already got a team. Right. That's an interesting point too. Fairly settled, although Eto'o
has gone. Okay, we were talking about best and worst signings. £60 million or variations thereof for Ibrahimovic. Kevin, you've always been a fan.
I admire his. I think the bigger the game, the better he plays not. I just think his record outside of Serie A is so poor. It's one heck of a gamble with Barcelona. Except, of course, they are such great players, they will lay on chances for him. But right. I don't see how he can possibly be worth that money.
I find it weird that nobody has really spoken about how the extraordinary amount of money Inter paid for or got for Ibrahimovic, like getting Eto'o.
And Eto'o in the bargain.
And a huge amount of money.
Yeah.
I would rate Eto'o as being a vastly superior player to...
Yeah, Timothy
if you only watch your football on YouTube, then yeah, Ibrahimovic is great, but otherwise... Very unconvincing.
Well, Timothy D. Clark posits that this was the special one, swapping Ibrahimovic for Eto'o and a skipful of Euros, was the canniest deal of all time. It really does smack of some very special working.
And the way Barcelona play with three strikers harrying defenders, you can't imagine Ibrahimovic wanting to do any of that. I mean, he's a sort of...
He's a black belt in taekwondo. We might rerun because he's got incredible talent and it has been so far inexpressed on the big occasions. And if he can't do it at Barcelona, then he really will be out of alibis. It's worth pointing out, though, that he has won his league title everywhere he's been playing for something like the last 6 or 7 years. He won it at Ajax, moved to Juventus, won every time there, and of course some were then taken away, but he refuses to accept that. He then moved to Inter and has won every title there. So he has been basically been domestic champion with his club for something like 8 years in a row now at three different clubs, not including the ones
could
that
we get his
away.
Tips for the Premier League and things like that.
So it is
the man
great.
Who knows,
you know, it's interesting. He you know, although he does rank as a bit of a damp squib internationally, on the domestic front he's been part up a winning package again and again and again. It does bring us on, though, to Italy and what the season is going to be like there. We've said that the Premier League looks like more of a level playing field. Will that be the case in Serie A, where Inter have basically strolled their way to the last couple of titles? But I think they look stronger. I think we've all said, you know, Eto'o is a more constructive player in the sense, you know, he actually finishes more. You've got Milito, brilliant player,
but ignored by Argentina,
strangely enough. Yes, Diego Milito is a fantastic player. He's going to do brilliantly there. And you've got Thiago Motta, who's resurrected himself at Genoa last season. And the only thing there about Inter is that they're still missing. When you saw them play last year, you probably thought, you know, there's no creative bloke there who kind of pulls everything together. And apparently that's the guy they're still trying to find. Wesley Snyder has been mentioned as a possible one. Then Antonio Cassano, who I'm not sure would necessarily fill that. But that's still the piece that Mourinho's looking to.
I'm sure there's pressure on Mourinho. I mean, he's expected to do something in Europe. I mean, they were winning leagues under Mancini with no problem. Yeah. So is there any kind of feeling that he's underachieved?
There was a feeling last season that he's underachieved. There doesn't seem to be any pressure on him because Massimo Moratti's gone and financed, although obviously the Eto'o.
That helped, yeah.
Yeah, it's helped. Yeah. But there doesn't seem to be any kind of cooling off of Moratti's backing for Mourinho. There does seem to be arguably a stronger field in terms of the competition. Juventus beating Real Madrid, for what that's worth, in the pre-season. Look really, really good. Very intelligent. They made the signing of the summer, I think, even considering Eto'o's Diego coming in from
Werder Bremen.
Mm. And also Felipe Melo, who looked really good in the Confederations Cup. So you've got very strong midfield there with those two. You've got up front, well, Del Piero's still there. Who was it? Oh, Trezeguet. That's maybe the one question mark about them, is that they haven't brought in somebody they were looking for, maybe Giuseppe Rossi to come in from Villarreal. But they do look very good under Chirafano.
What about Milan?
Well, Milan, the report last night was that Huntelaar's going there. There was a big, big meeting. After Napoli unveiled their new team, which Napoli, you know, were a bit of a surprise last year, and they brought in Quagliarella to play alongside Lavezzi, and you know, they're looking like they are consolidating in their push for a European place. But they had this, they brought all the team in on helicopters and powerboats to some cruise ship that De Laurentiis, their owner, had rented for the occasion down in the Bay of Naples, and they did their presentation there, a bit like Berlusconi used to back in the day. And the joke was that Napoli have hired a cruise ship for their presentation. Galliani's gone out and got a pedalo for Milan, because, you know, these days Milan do everything on the cheap. And Berlusconi, whether stung by this particular remark or just in general, had a big meeting at Milanello last week, in which apparently he has okayed the spending of some of the money they got for Kaká. And after talking about accepting Pizarro from Chelsea as their new big signing up front, apparently they've gone for Huntelaar.
Is it fair to say that Berlusconi might have been distracted somewhat?
Scoring of a different nature. Yeah. Ooh, what are you talking about? Anyway, so actually, you know, they kept Pirlo. Leonardo's a real gamble because he's never been a manager before. If they've brought in Huntelaar, I think that's excellent news. They've already got some good young strikers up front. Boriello, if he can stay fit this time around. Pato, brilliant prospect. They've got certainly one decent player coming in at the back, although I think arguably they need a new left back because Jankulovski's right, but etc. And the other thing about them is that they have Ronaldinho. When you talk about virtual signings, people who are suddenly going to come back and play, that was the guy that Berlusconi's been focusing on when he went to Milanella, the training camp, for their presentation. And he made Ronaldinho get up on a table and swear to the rest of the team that he was going to live right and be the fulcrum of the Rossoneri again. And apparently it was all quite moving, and rather than being hideously offended and patronised by this experience, Ronaldinho was actually touched to be made the focus again. I think Ronaldinho had one or two issues with Carlo Ancelotti and, you know, not being made the centre of attention there, but he was the guy who was sacrificed to make room for what Ancelotti wanted to do, particularly for Kaká. So it is conceivable that with Leonardo on board, that with Ronaldinho motivated in a way that he wasn't last season and before at Barcelona, that, you know, that's a huge player if you could get him back to his
I guess best. Being a World Cup year as well, yeah. there's an incentive there from.
Fair point. Having said all that, obviously things are a little bit still up in the air vis-a-vis the Italian transfer market because they start a little bit later. And we will do a full Italian preview then before their season kicks off on the 22nd.
What the hell was that if it was the full Italian preview?
Just wait.
We'd watch it for about 12 minutes.
That wasn't... Barry... He's joking, listeners. He's joking. He said it with a twinkle in his eye.
You should see the daggers at the nice room.
Come, Sean. Now, we will actually be back just after the start of the season, the 17th of August, is it? Many thanks in the meantime, listeners, for being with us today. And producer Ben, for putting it all together. Kevin, Barry and Sean. Sean, you got a little announcement to make?
Well, no, not very exciting, but two things. First of all, next Monday sees the publication of the season, which is a 74-page booklet in Monday's Guardian. And secondly, we are launching our Pick the Score game on Monday as well.
Pick
so,
the Score.
There'll be, you can win free £25 bets every week. Week and other things as well.
Okay, excellent. We'll be back on the 17th and look forward to you joining us then, listeners. Bye bye for now.